My name is Vittorio Bertocci. I'm a principal architect evangelist in Redmond. My focus is on identity and the Windows Azure platform, also software as a service. This is the third year in a row that I come here in Happy Antwerp, and it's all thanks to you. Thank you, guys. Like, the first time I was invited by Catherine, but every other time you guys said, hey, we kind of like the Italian hippie, so send him over again. And ta-da, here I am. I always love to come back to Europe, since the States, they can be fun, but not always. Okay, I am very grateful that you guys are choosing to come here to a boring subject, which is identity, as opposed, for example, to go to see the phone. Also on the phone, there are ladies that are much easier on the eyes than myself. So I am especially touched that you are here. And before we start, I'll ask you a question, and as usual, you will not answer, but hey, I'll try. How many of you guys saw the video of my PDC presentation in 2010? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. You guys, unless some demo fails, this is the same presentation, but formatted for your screen, which in this case is actually the case. So unless you are especially fond of my very thick accent, I would suggest that you make a better use of your time. But of course, if you want to stay here, by all means. And that said, if there is one thing that you will bring with you once you leave the room, probably in 15 minutes, because you won't be able to take it anymore, is there are many different ways of handling identity access control. However, claims-based identity is the approach which works best across the board. That's the core. Like, I will be blabbering about many different things, but I will be always saying the same thing, which is this. Also, this would be a good time for you to tell me if I am speaking too fast. Am I speaking too fast? Thank you. So if you write in the feedback that I was speaking too fast, then we are not friends anymore. All right, so for giving you a feeling of what you are getting into now, I'm going to just paint the list of scenarios that I'm going to touch across this session. Usually here, at this point, I say, yeah, probably I will not make it, I will not cover everything, because I expect questions. But since we are in Belgium, I think that this time I'll actually manage to do the entire thing. Please, please, please prove me wrong. So our baseline for identity is the classic on-premise scenario. I was just going to ask you how many of you are ISVs, but never mind. Assuming that many of you are ISVs or software developers, and assuming that you spend some time in the industry before this big cloud hit the desk of our marketing people, before you'd target software on-premise. So you'd have your customer with their environment, their data center, which sometimes is one PC under the desk of somebody, still data center, very teeny. They'd have users that live in that context, and you'd have some way of keeping those users somewhere, directories, custom IP identity providers, whatever, and your software would go straight there. This problem is well known, it is well understood, it's not always well solved, but hey, you can always screw it up if you really want to. And now, again, following our marketing, the big rage is taking this application and deploying it in the cloud. Since here I have somewhere Microsoft, then I will talk about the Microsoft cloud. However, be warned, all the things that we are saying actually apply to any other cloud. Of course, ours is the best, but it's your choice. If you want to apply the same pattern elsewhere, you are welcome to do so. And so we'll try to understand what it means to move stuff in the cloud in terms of how it changes the identity and access management. And then, since we are in the cloud, we'll try to cater to multiple customers, multiple partners. And we'll see how the access control and the techniques that you use there have to change, or maybe have not to change, if you designed your system in the correct way. And then, of course, we live in 2011, so this is just like one teeny island in the ocean of potential users that live on the internet. And those users are literally countries, but instead of calling them Austria, Canada, we call them Facebook, Google, Live ID, sometimes even Yahoo. Not so often these days. And at this point, if you write your application and you want to cater to that audience, actually, there is money to be made because the business customers, the one that we started from, have the deepest pockets of all. But there is just a boatload of these people on Facebook, on LiveID and similar. So even if they give you very little, they are still an extremely interesting audience, audience that you want to be able to engage with, authenticate them, authorize them, and so on. And of course, the techniques that you're going to use there are different because you have to adapt to the scale, but also the weaker tiles. So we'll touch on that as well. How many of you guys have a Windows phone? I so should not have asked. So, regardless of how many of you have a smartphone? All right, I'll go home now. So, you know, because you are a user of smartphones, that as soon as you have it in your hand, you'll go and you'll search for the application or your favorite website. And if that does not deliver the same functionality of the full-fledged application, you typically are pissed. And you start complaining, you start tweeting about it, saying, oh, this is crap, and so on. So, as application developer, it is of the utmost importance to understand how to target these people, like the smartphones, these kind of applications, and similar. And of course, while saving as much as possible. Let's say, reusing as much of your infrastructure as possible, understanding what are the limits, and so on. So that's pretty much the width, the span of what I'd like to talk about. Sounds fair? Great. And I hope that you liked that slide because I put so much effort in it, which is the last one of the deck. The rest of the deck is empty, and I'm not joking. See? It's all empty. But if you guys are patient with me, perhaps we can spend some time building it, and then at the end of my slot, we'll actually present it. So let me go ahead and start with the first scenario that we said. Let's actually look at how users, like how access control works on-premise. So let's grab a user. Here is a user on-premise. And here, by sheer chance, of course, I have a set of clipparts that, hey, coincidence, they are exactly the clipparts that I need for this slide. And in fact, here, what do we need? We need a data center, and we need a directory, for example. And here, there is your application, with, as we said, we deploy it there. How does authentication work here? Well, pretty straightforward. Your user will probably be already authenticated there. For the sheer fact that the user is sitting in front of their work section, it means that they typed their stuff. So something somewhere in the network knows about this user. This user is already authenticated. So your job as application, as developers of... I will do this a lot. I apologize in advance. Of this thing, the application, is to understand what's available in there, like understanding the details of implementation, and take advantage of that. So the classic example is, let's say that you have Active Directory. Well, fantastic. Then in your application, you can use the Windows authenticated mode. So that at that point, you just leverage the system. In any case, whatever you do, it will stick to what you have locally, and you'll just use it for authenticating. So you'll typically have single sign-on. I will never stop trying. You can be as silent until you are blue in the face. I will keep trying. But all this takes place in... I don't know if you have it in here. Those little snowballs with the little Antwerp statue, and you move it, and you get all the snow everywhere. So this is pretty much the same, but at IT scale. Let's say that everything is taking place behind a boundary, the boundary of that enterprise. Within that enterprise, you have full control. You can do whatever. It may be costly, but you can do it. Now, let's instead move in a different place. Let's make it slightly smaller. And let's introduce a word from our sponsor, Windows Azure. And now let's say that you believe into the marketing that says, hey, grab your application, run it in the cloud, and everything will be fine. So let's do that. Let's grab our application a bit bigger. Let's move it to the cloud. Would it be that easy every time? See, I moved it to the cloud. Let's get rid of our own data center, and let's go ahead, and assuming we changed nothing about this, let's just have this user landing here. And the result is, who are you again? This application is your code. You wrote it. And now, I like to joke, but it is true. If you wrote this on .NET, and if you used some basic hygiene for distributed systems, you grab it, you run it in the cloud, there are just a couple of things that you need to adjust. I won't deny that there is something to adjust, but little things. But here, let's assume that you take it as is, you shove it in the cloud, and let's say that you are using Windows Authentication. Now the user is coming there and is using plain HTTP. HTTPS, if you are as paranoid as I am. And there is nothing in the infrastructure which forces the authentication of a user. When that application was running here, the sheer fact that that application can be contacted on the network means that there is a network software that will enforce authentication. Nothing can exist within a Kerberos network without having some forms of authentication. As soon as I bring it out, be it the cloud or not, here what I'm doing is I am shattering this thing. And of course, now I'm back to square one. And now what is the real issue? Let me get rid of all these boundaries. The real issue is that I have a capability. This is a classic software as a service problem. I have a capability which is authenticating users for which I need to know the details of the implementation for being able to use it. In other words, I have a capability that cannot be reused beyond a certain boundary. And what do you do for solving this problem in service orientation? That's easy. You call Dr. McCoy and Mr. Spock. No. What you do is you slap a facade in front of it. The main issue is I need to know the details for using that service. Like, I need a connection string, or perhaps I need to access the domain controller. I need to know details. In service orientation, what you do is you understand what is the function that you want to deliver. You describe that function with a contract, very clear, very neat, very abstract. Just that function and nothing else. You put this facade in front of it, and you ask everybody to use that contract. No need to know the details. Go through the contract. That's basic service orientation, web services, and similar. Since we are talking about identity, the problem that we have for adding a facade here is a problem that you see very often, to the point that we invented a specific flavor of web service that can be used here. And that flavor has a very unappealing name of Security Token Service, or STS. How many of you guys already heard the term STS before? Everybody. So I'm boring you to death, basically. You already know all of this. But in the abstract, I wrote that this was for people that don't know about it. So I don't feel guilty. In any case, let's say that you can actually slap the facade on top of this so that I no longer need to know the details. Now I can call this from anywhere I want. At this point, the problem becomes representing in your identities in a way that can be understood outside of your boundaries. And that representation is the now famous, world famous, security token. A security token is just an artifact, a piece of XML or binary and similar, which represents the successful outcome of one authentication operation. If I use that facade and I successfully authenticate, as a prize, I get a token. This token is typically signed so that everybody can recognize it, and it contains attributes about the user. And those attributes are famously called claims. Perfect. Who said claims? All right. You won a book for breaking into things. Yeah. Now, seriously, I don't know why MS Press decided to put a pry bar in a security book, but I'll leave it here. it will explode as soon as you grab it. It's a trap. So we know what the token is. So let's hide it here for a moment. And then the last thing that we do for closing the circle is a surrogate for that network software that enforces the authentication within our network. That surrogate is a funnel. Well, I couldn't find a better representation, but this is like a piece of middleware which lives in HTTP and sits in front of your application, be it a website, web service, or whatever, and if you are not authenticated, it will enforce the authentication process. The thing that I'm not saying here is that all these can be based on open standards. Let's say that there are standards which describe those entities, and if I rely on those standards, then I am even less dependent on details. Like all this stuff may be in different platforms, different technology vendors. Of course, Microsoft will give you the best of the best, but if you choose to use somebody else, if we all use the same set of protocols, AWS Federation, SAML, AWS Trust, OAuth, OpenID, and many others, then we can actually talk to each other. So let's quickly see how these may work. User tries to land an application, not authenticated. So here there will be some configuration that will know where to send the user to be authenticated. Here. Here the user will use whatever system the authority there, which we call identity provider, decides to use for authenticating. Upon successful authentication, it will get a token. Token that then will be sent here. And here the token will go through what I like to define the four stages of grief. So it will be checked for correct signature. It will be decrypted if it's encrypted. It will be deserialized using the specific format. It will be verified for the set of claims that are in there, and many other things. It's actually more than four, but four kind of sounds okay. And once all this happens successfully, then the user is considered authenticated. And at this point, you can actually establish a session. And how do you do that? With a cookie. And so you grab your cookie, you send it to your user, and happiness ensues. So as you can see here, closing the circle was actually pretty straightforward. And the interesting thing is you could have used this approach everywhere, not just for the cloud. It just so happens that when you use this approach, the cloud is not an issue. Like, it works just as well. So when you do things right, there is always an advantage to be made. And that said, let me actually just show you how this may work. How many of you guys ever wrote something in Windows Azure? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. A lot. Okay. What I'm doing here, I'm opening one Visual Studio project. Hey, there are extensions available. And this Visual Studio project, even if you never used the cloud, is in fact just one website. We call it WebRoll, but in the end, this is mostly a website, which just happens to have one description that you can use for actually deploying it in Windows Azure or run it in the local environment. Now, let's say that I have this local authority here. Forgot a little detail. Again, marketing. This little thing here on our platform is called Active Directory Federation Services. This is a Windows Server role, which, of course, is hence completely free. You can download it. You can install it on any Windows Server 2008 machine. Your domain can be 2003. Works perfectly well. And you just get a series of checkboxes. And if you want this facade, all you need to do is go and put a checkbox. And your domain controller learns to speak SAML just like this. Very straightforward. And then the funnel is instead Windows Identity Foundation. Windows Identity Foundation is one extension of a .NET framework. Technically, it is part of a .NET framework. We just delivered that out of band so that you can use it also with .NET 3.5. If we would have wedged it in 4.0, you would not have been able to. That's an extension of the .NET framework that you can use for programming against this style, those claim things. And now I'm just going to show you, give you a demonstration of that, a very simple one. Yeah, identity demos usually, they have to be boring. If they are not boring, that means that something is not going right. So I'm hoping this will be boring, just to be clear. So let's say that I have this authority available. Normally this would be ADFS, but ADFS requires Active Directory. I am not an infrastructural guy, and I'm proud of it. So I don't have a directory available here. How many of you are IT pros? Come on, don't be shy. There is nothing wrong with it. Just one. You are welcome to stay, but as you may have understood, that's not the like the cup of tea of the administrator. It's more for developers, architects. So please don't fail me saying, oh, too much code. No, I'm not going to show almost any code at all. Anyway, since I don't have Active Directory, I have my little surrogate, which is one application that I wrote, which pretends to be Active Directory. This is a little WinForm app. Also, I'm not good at WPF. Usually, protocol people are not great UI designers. And substantially, this guy just exposes one endpoint. You can decide which claims you want to expose, and you can use it for testing. If you download it, please use it just for testing. Like, the security of this thing is non-existent, literally. It's just for playing. And here, I can make pretend that I have ADFS. So now it's actually listening. And I can copy the address of the document that describes its contract. And then now here, let's see if I manage to do dynamic zoom. I can right-click, and in the menu that I get this extra entry called Add STS Reference. This calls out a wizard, which you saw already last year, which I can use for connecting to any existing security token service. All I need to do is just make paste, do next. Now my system is reading all the details of the contract, complaining that I don't have HTTPS. And then here I have a list of claims that that identity provider is capable of producing. If I hit next, finish, now the system automatically configures my application. And when I now hit F5, what's going to happen? The system is going to package this application and run it in the Windows Azure simulation environment. So it's just like if it would be running in the cloud. It's not on my local IIS. And then the user, oops, I wasn't fast enough. And then the application tries to hit the address, but all right, do you want me to sing something? I tried to get this cursed application. I was not authenticated. I got redirected to the STS, and that STS substantially just authenticated me because it's a test, so I didn't really do any enforcement. I got back a token, and that token is actually here. Here you can see a little control which we designed, which is a debug element. It shows the content of this token. And at this point here, I could do a number of interesting things, such as, for example, deciding that only administrators can see certain pages, and that's exactly what I could enforce directly outside of the system. So here we could, I'm back. Thank you. I'm sorry, just a second before I spit a tonsil. It doesn't look good in the recording. And so here, I'm literally just scratching the surface. If you are interested in the topic, there is a book that I can suggest on Amazon. No, of course I can't, because for full disclosure. But anyway, I won't go into the details. Here, you could do a number of interesting things. The message that you should get is, it doesn't matter that this application is now running in the cloud or wherever else, I can always reuse the existing identities. In fact, in Microsoft, we are deploying new applications in Windows Azure for internal reasons, level of business up, at the rhythm of something like, I don't know the latest figures, but last time I checked, it was between 30 and 50 new applications every month. And before, it was always an issue like configuring, VPNing, weird stuff. Instead, now, when you create your application, you send one mail to one guy in IT, which I know personally, so it can be faster for me. And they just provision in the local ADFS your application, and you are done. Now, every employee of Microsoft can hit that application, get redirected on ADFS. If we are on the internet, single sign-on, just like this. You don't see anything. If I'm here, you'll see in a short that I will use that thing, and I will actually get prompted by my credentials. I put my credentials, and I'm authenticated. So here the point is all about reuse, which is all fine and dandy, but, oops. No, we don't deserve a diploma yet. But what happens if we make things slightly more interesting? So let me clean up things a bit. No cookies for you. Let's say that instead of having one customer, we have, if I manage, two. Let's actually change the color so that we can tell them apart. Okay. Now we have two customers, just like we said. We have an application in the cloud, so we get as many want to buy our app as many will try to sell, of course. So how does the interaction change? So let's just go through the flow again and let's understand that. So let's start with our blue friend. Can you see that it's blue? Oh, yes. Can you see okay? Good. Good, because otherwise I would have no way of fixing it. So, but hey, I just had to ask. Okay, the user tries to get on this application. What happens now? We just saw it on the other one, so be bold. What happens now? Redirection two, we are on the good, which STS? We have two of them. But we don't know which one, right? We have two of them. So the idea was very good, but you went exactly where I wanted you. I just wanted to show that before we knew by the context where to send the user. And now we have two of them. Two is the smallest number higher than one. And we could have literally tens of thousands of partners. I have customers in your German friends in Germany that actually have tens of thousands of partners. They are a big manufacturer. They have suppliers all over the place. So these can actually get crazy. So anyway, here we are encountering what in literature is known as the Homer Helm discovery problem. I don't know from where you're coming from, so I don't know where to send you. Here there are a number of solutions. The brute force solution is typically, well, first, you need to keep like a database of all the various ones. And then I can actually ask the user. Like I can have a user land on one page with all the options. At that point, the user, if you're lucky, will pick the right one. And at this point, we restore the flow like before. I go to my own. I grab a token. I use the token. Like before. So let's do quickly the same from the other customer. Red customer tries to get in, not authenticated. What happens? Excellent. Tries to pick from the list. If I would have more than one book, I would give you one. But I have just one. I apologize. So here there's the same list. The user again clicks on its own, comes in here, wins a token, uses the token here. Good. Great. Fantastic. Now, this worked. However, this may actually be an interesting burden because now you actually have to maintain all this stuff. You have a problem of showing this list. And especially, those two tokens can be widely different. Here, I'm making the assumption that they are using the same protocol, they are using the same token format, but even the sheer information in those tokens can be different. So we did all this effort for taking this application and extracting the logic and putting it in the funnel, and now we are back to square one. No, not really. But we are still not in a perfect situation in which our code is not polluted by authentication code. So for example, if in one case one group is a group administrators and I know that for my application that the group administrator has a certain rights, then the red customer perhaps it has administrator, which is the same information, but the format is different. So I have to write switch case administrator, do something. Switch administrator, do something. And that's hard to write, not hard to write, but usually harder to maintain. So that's not the best approach. So let's see if we can actually come out with a better approach. So let me rewind all of these. Talking back to their homes. The trick here is to introduce a new actor. An actor that before we called identity provider, now this time we call this a federation provider. This is again a web service of STS flavor, but the difference is whereas the identity provider used the STS as a facade for an authentication store, the federation provider is just a transformation point. It's a place which eats one token and spits a different token. And usually the new token is somewhat derived from the other. This is an architectural element that you can use for a number of interesting things. For example, instead of having your application to trust directly from the application to the identity provider, you could trust this federation provider and then have a federation provider trust the all the identity providers. So you, as application developer, you get out of a problem of managing all those differences and you restore like the ideal situation in which you don't have to worry about it. Easier to be drawn than described. So what happens here? First, this problem moves here. It's no longer your issue. Let's do the same flow that we did before, but now assuming that there is a trust here. Blue user lands on the application. What happens now? I'm sorry. Which one? Three of them. The new one. Perfect. Again, another virtual book. I apologize. I actually get there, and now it's the job of this guy to show the list. And again, the list is just one of the many possible options. I could find other ways to disambiguate, but this one is the easiest to understand. You have this list, the user picks it, you come here, you get the token, and now, every time you do all those chains, you always go in one direction, and then you rebuild in the opposite direction. So now we are percolating back, we get this token, and we send it here. And now here, something interesting happens. Since the job of this guy is to transform this token, since we added it, we can normalize it. That's to say that if there is a blessed normal state of these tokens, we can take this chance to apply that logic so that also this logic will be available to a number of applications, not just this one. And so here, I'll represent this with sick green. Now, this one is a different token. This token is transformed from the other one. And I send it back, and then following the chain in the opposite direction, I come here, and then here it will go through the usual steps, and we are there. No rocket science. And now let me do the same quickly this time through the red one. Red user comes here, not authenticated, gets redirected in the intermediary, gets prompted, picks his own identity provider, wins a red token, very prized, sends the red token here, here, normalization. And here the logic may be different, of course, since the input is different, but the output is the same, you may have different rules. But then the result is pretty much the same. So as you can see here, end result, I come coming from two different places, but the token now is substantially the same. Now, that does not mean that I cannot know from where it's coming from. If it's important for me to know that this thing is representing a blue user or a red user, I can. But the key is I'm not forced to deal with that. Now I can normalize everything so that my application remains exactly the same. So in other words, if your application has gold and silver users, and if you have a logic in the blue case for mapping administrator to gold, in the other case to map administratore to gold, your application doesn't even care that originally those guys were administrator or administrator. As long as the logic here, when it makes the token green, it makes the mapping so that you always see gold. So you can see how this is actually service orientation. That's to say that there is the right place for doing everything. Then I understand that it's not the most exciting thing in the world, but when it really saves you work or headaches, it is actually pretty awesome. Now, of course, we have an app for that. And I hate myself for using this dry humor, but hey. And in our offering, we have multiple products that can play the federation provider role. That's an architectural role. You could use ADFS for that. On-prem is that, historically what you use. But in the cloud, you use the Windows Azure App Fabric Access Control Service. Sometimes it seems that they pay us more if the service is, the name is longer. And, but in fact, for friends, it's ACS. This thing is actually a federation provider for rent in the cloud, so that if you need this translation functionality, all you need to do is subscribe to this service, and this service will spin one STS for you, and it will give you the chance of changing the logic so that you can define how you want to normalize things, which identity providers you want to trust, and all these kind of things. The Access Control Service has been released a couple of weeks ago in Vegas. It was a great party, thank you. Anyway, Vegas is always pretty nice. And it's going to be free until at least the end of the calendar year. So if you want to play with that, if you even want to go in production, you just go on windows.azure.com, you create your namespace, and you can use it for free until the end of the year, which is pretty nice. But after so much blubbering, let's actually take a look at how it works. So let's say that now, instead of wanting to play... Oh, no, picture. Yeah, I need a big screen because, you know, the ego is big as well. So somehow they match. So let's say that we have this application, and now instead of dealing just with organization one, we want to deal also with organization two at the same time. And let's say that we want to use the Access Control Service for doing that. And well, here the trick is fairly straightforward. I can go to my namespace, which is the name of a project that you can use for this, and here you're going to see our federation in action. My user in Windows Azure is my Microsoft employee account. So what I'm doing here is I'm actually hitting my ADFS, and so now since, unfortunately, my brain is, I do one thing or the other, and if I type, I cannot blubber. So now I will type. Forgive me for a few seconds. Oops. I'm a great typist, huh? After like 20 years in the industry, I still hunt and peck. Yes. Let's see it. Eventually, all the bits have to go on the other side of the planet, be recognized, jump back. You know how this works. But anyway, now what I'm doing is I'm landing on the management page of this specific namespace. Oh, excellent. Live ID is not working right now. This is going to be an issue. So let me try again. The happy thing about the cloud is exactly this, that if it doesn't work, doing a demo is pretty complicated. So let me do this again. What did I say about being the same of PDC but with failing demos? And let's see if live this time has a better, feels better. Please tell me that you feel better, and it feels better. So here what you see is in my namespace. This is one page that the Access Control Service is rendering just for me. This page is actually just one of the many endpoints that are being created for me. This is exactly the same namespace that is used for making the endpoint for actually giving me tokens. But instead of getting tokens here, I'm getting HTML. And here, what do we want to do? We want to add one identity provider. Here, I already configured this to use the identity provider that I used before when I created my application and I trusted it directly. So that part we already have. Now, what I want to do is I want to add another identity provider. And that's pretty straightforward. I just hit add, and here I could add many different types, because we support fluffy web protocols, but also very serious business ones. Guess which one is my preference. And in this case, we are still talking with businesses, so we will pick the organization too. Next, let's call it organization two. And here, I'm doing pretty much the same thing that I did before doing add STS reference, but I'm doing it on another STS because I'm doing the double hop. And since my address is not available on the internet, I have to upload the file. Like, this is something which is running on my own machine. SDR, federation sample, provider 2, federation metadata. Okay. From this, the access control service can actually derive what it's going to use for engaging with that thing. So I just hit save. Good. Now I need to define which claims I want to make available for my application, because by default, we give you nothing. Because for security reasons, we don't want to actually add stuff. Should I lose the... No, better not. And for doing that, you have a very, very easy method, which is creating rules. Most rules are like, let me tell you, stupid rules, like super easy. You can just say, if you see this claim in input with this value, then put in output this claim type with this other claim value. Or if you just wanted to pass everything through, like you don't want to do any manipulation logic, we actually have this functionality which we call a generate, in which the system will see all the claims that the identity provider can produce. We read it from the metadata, and it will generate mapping rules which are just pass-throughs. In fact, as you can see here, all the rules that says org2 are just rules that says if you see in a claim type email, then just make it available in output. So I didn't do anything especially weird. Now, what I needed to do is wire up my application to this endpoint, because what I did at first was to wire up directly to organization one. Instead, now I want to trust here. So in other words, before, this application had this configured to talk directly here. Now I want to talk with this guy. And it's pretty straightforward, because I can come in the application integration area, copy the address of my metadata document, come back here. I will not zoom because we already saw this. I will repeat the same flow, but this time add the reference to that STS. And slowly, I can change this. Great. And now let me just hit F5. And now let's see what happens, if something happens. Let's see if you know. Well, it will happen too fast, so I cannot ask you to guess. But here we'll hit the application, be redirected to the access control service, and be prompted. Because, of course, now the access control service doesn't know which one we want to pick. If we would have had just one, it would have gone straight. Now, instead, they have to ask. So do you want me to go org1 or org2? Two. You know that it's useless. It's just for seeing if you are awake. And you are. I'm impressed. Org2. And of course, you know what happened? I didn't launch org2. Excellent. Here, I needed to start another instance. See, if I would have IDFS, starting another Active Directory would be kind of complicated. Instead, now, I can just do this. But unfortunately, because of my hubris, I have to start over. But anyway, as you can see here, I have now two instances which run, so in theory, things should now go. And actually, this gives me a chance to show you another feature. Of course, I designed all this. It was all on purpose. Here, before, I asked for org1 and org2. And now I'm showing just org2 because the access control service remembers your former option. So at this point, it tries to make things easier for you, because users will always surprise you with stupid things that they do. So the more you try to put them on rails, and the better your life will be. So let's hit org2, and this time, hopefully, since it's running, it works. Perfect, it runs. But as you can see here, we are not in Kansas anymore. Before I was Joe, and now I am Xiao. And I hope nobody here speaks Chinese, because I know that I butcher the tones every time. So here I have a glaring example of what I said before. I'm getting the same claims as before, so I'm lucky. I have the same claim types, but the values are dramatically different. Now my claimed group is something that, honestly, with all good intention, I cannot pronounce. So now I should, in theory, teach to my application that that thing means administrator. I checked. And of course, this is just one of the many things that I may have to teach my application for handling this. So why doing it in the application when I can use the access control service for eliminating this specific problem? So thank Mom Microsoft for cut and paste. I copied that. I go in the groups. And let me go to the rule that is now copying the group value for organization two from the input to output without changes. And now let me just come here and modify it. Can you see it, or do you want me to zoom? Well, just in case, I will zoom. Okay, here it says, rule is very easy. If you are coming from identity provider organization two, yeah, for some reason, I cannot scroll. And yes, I can. And the input type is group, and the input value is, right now we don't care, we say any. And instead now we will want to care, and we say when you are this thing. Then before we didn't really had to say anything, we just said pass through, copy whatever you have. And now instead we want to get the group claim as value, we want to embed this knowledge, which this thing means, administrator. So let me zoom out. Ah, finally. And description, very clear description of the rule. I'll save it. And now let me close this guy and just hit F5 again. I didn't change a lot of the code here, right? It was pretty straightforward. I didn't change code at all, just in case you didn't pick that. So now the system goes back in there, again asks me for organization two, I click organization two, and now there is always the suspense, because who knows if I mistyped something. What will happen when I will open that thing? I don't know, do you know? And it worked. As you can see, I am no longer that Chinese thing, but I am now administrator. And now, of course, here it's a bit of an extreme example, but just imagine what that means for you to leave the application exactly as is, just to cope with specific concepts of the application without having to ever worry about what happens before that. Here you may have things like discounts, you may change relationships from time to time. There may be all sorts of considerations which map a certain identity in certain capabilities in your system. Having this intermediary in the cloud so you don't have to worry about it at all, thank you for being here in a second. It's really an enormous advantage. It's really, really great. Yes, sir. The question is, can you talk from ACS to the outside? And the answer is, you have to yell very loud. No, okay. I forgot that I'm in Antwerp. So ACS is on the public internet. That's to say that the endpoint that you saw there, this endpoint, which is the root of every other endpoint, is on the public internet. So you can access it from anywhere. As long as you have a device which is capable of talking to public internet, you absolutely can. So you can use it internally, outside, and so on. Unless I am misunderstanding your question.
Yeah, I was wondering whether you
can
use classic ASP
instead of a cloud. Okay. The clarification is if we can use a classic ASP net rather than the cloud. And by all means, absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Like, this thing is simply under the cloud umbrella, but you can use it wherever you want. Thanks for the question. All right, so that was fairly straightforward. But hey, that's always business. So let's do something slightly more colorful, if I manage. So let's say that Let me get rid of some things. These here will be useful later. Let's say that instead of dealing with business users, boring business users, you are in San Francisco and you get this cool guy with a goatee, maybe a hat. I don't know if you've ever been in San Francisco, but they are all like that. And those guys, of course, would never like lower themselves. They use a directory. Those guys are cool. Hence, they use Facebook. They use Google. If they are slightly less cool, they use Windows Live ID and Yahoo. And of course, here I am totally joking. Let's say that you want to cater to this audience, but you don't want to rewrite the entire thing. Also because those guys may be cool, but usually, as I said, it's not that they bring a lot of money. Like, of course they can. Like, in this occasion, let's say that your application, you want to open it not just to your employees, but there are also some consultants that are not in your directory, but you want them to have access there anyway. And so you want to use their external identities, like, for example, Facebook and similar. In that case, potentially the pockets are deep as well. So there is not a direct correlation. But in general, for these guys, you go for scale, so ads and similar. So let's say that you don't want really to change too much of application. Actually, let's say that you are lazy and Italian and you don't want to change it whatsoever at all. So how do you actually get these guys into the fold? Well, that's pretty straightforward. Let's say that your cool user using some browser, I don't know which one, lands on your application. What happens next? Yes, we didn't change anything, so what happens is that we get projected here. And now let's say that we added those guys. Like instead of having guys identity providers, just the two that I added, I also added Facebook, Live ID, and similar. So what happens here is that I actually show the various icons, and the user can just choose one. Which one do we want me to choose? Yahoo! Perfect. That's a very original choice. I like it. Okay, so here there is an interesting property of the federation providers and specifically of the access control service. Not only they decouple you from things like normalizing claims and managing relationships and similar, but it can also help you to use one specific pattern, which we call the protocol transition pattern, not the little pause for creating expectations. This protocol transition allows you to use one protocol with the application and a different protocol with the identity provider. So you picked Yahoo. With Yahoo, we speak OpenID. That's the protocol that Yahoo chose to expose stuff with, which incidentally is the same protocol that Google is using. Whereas Facebook on Tuesdays use OAuth. On Wednesdays, I'd use Connect. No, I'm just joking. But let's say they are always on the bleeding edge, so they fairly often change the protocols, or at least the versions of the protocols. And Live, Live use its own thing. So here, the access control service knows about those protocols and is able to engage in the correct way. So the user here gets redirected in Yahoo, authenticates using the Yahoo UI, gets back a token or similar token, sends this here, and here, guess what? You can use exactly the same thing that you used before, transform whatever you received into a token, not just a token, but a green token, send it back, and for your application, literally nothing changed. You are using exactly the same logic that you were using before, and it's in there. During the months in which this service was in beta, Facebook actually changed the protocol a number of times. Our customers had no idea, blissfully ignorant of this, because everything was hidden away but the access control service. Their application was just trusting the access control service like I did now, and we changed our protocol for following whatever they decided. So one of the advantages of this is that you can outsource all of those efforts. The disadvantage is that you are kind of dependent on that. So if, for example, we decided to hold that off, well, you would have had no way of pushing that. But you can always get the matter in your own hands. Let's say that you can always add the things in the middle if you want. Now, we successfully authenticated using Yahoo. So what? There are many millions of others that can do the same. So here there is a fundamental difference with authenticating from a business identity provider and a web identity provider. In a business identity provider, if I can authenticate from the Microsoft STS like I did for getting in there, you get thick, rich information like the role that I play, until now if I don't draw anything inappropriate in there, or my name, or potentially all the information that this trustworthy entity is saying about me. Like they verified that, because for giving me a salary, they actually had to verify that. Whereas I can go to Yahoo and pretend that I am Sophia Loren. And nobody will send the internet Gestapo home saying, you are not Sophia Loren. I can do it, no issues. So here the point is, you don't get the information that are available per se. What you get is outsourcing the verification of credentials. That's to say that your application does not have to impose to the user to remember yet another username and password, but they have the convenience of going and reusing their existing account. But now you have this interesting issue in which you need somehow to recognize that it's actually that account. So it's not just any Yahoo, it's that Yahoo account. So you need to set up something like a sign-up system in which, for example, you know the email of your user, you send one mail to that user with one activation link. If the user follows that activation link and use one of those accounts, then you tie the two things together, and at this point you verify that they are capable of seeing the mail, otherwise they would not know that link, and you are done. So here you actually need further steps, like for example, making these management calls in which, like, the first time you see the token, you create a record somewhere so that you can put the two things together. And now, rather than doing it from scratch, which is kind of longish, here I'm going to show you one existing example of this, which I hope I reset, because I just made a demo of this morning and I may have forgot to reset it. This sample is one live sample which is available on Windows Azure. You can just type www.fabricamshipping.com, and there is one instance. You can get there and play with it. There are no requirements. You just need the browser to see that. And there, I actually give a demonstration of this process of signing up users. So let me just show it to you. And I will not go into the details of like this scenario. I just wanted to show this signing up using any identity from web providers. If you wanted to know details about this, just come to my session tomorrow and I'll give you a headache about this. Yeah? Sounds inviting. So here, well, what I'm doing actually here is subscribing for get a new instance of this software as a service solution. And in so doing, I will give a quick description of what I want to have in this instance, which you can largely ignore in this case. But what's important is that as the administrator of this instance now, I can add users to it. Like, let's say that I will create an instance for myself, and I want to invite my two employees. And I don't have a directory, I know their emails. And I'm using their Google accounts and Hotmail accounts for authenticating them in here. So here I'm just describing my users in terms of like the roles that I want them to play for this application and similar, and then I will provide the email. And the system will automatically send activation mail and do the little trick which I described. So let's go ahead and add myself. And of course I want all the possible powers. And let's add also somebody from Google. Okay. So now the system knows that I will have two users for this application. I know the addresses where I have to send the invitation. I yet don't know which token they will use. It will be for them to decide. Next. Okay. Once I'm here, I have a PayPal integration, never mind. Once I hit subscribe, the system in the backend will start one instance of Windows Azure, deploy my custom application, and among the various things that it will do, it will also send these two invitations that I just set. So now I have just to hit F5 a number of times and keep the fingers like this. And see, always works. Not always, but. So what happens here is that The system is telling me the workflow it followed for provisioning this new instance. And among other things here, you can see this send activation request. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Now let's go to Hotmail and see from the point of view of one user if we got the mail. And we did. Here we got this, please activate your account for this instance. So if I open this mail, here I received one specific address, like this is an MVC app, just for giving you the background story. And here I have a ticket, which was automatically generated, associated to the profile which I described. Like I know that this is Adam, Adam is going to be in these three roles and similar. What I don't know is which identity they will use. So now if I follow this link, I will be offered to pick one identity among the ones that as a designer of this application, I decided. Here, if I want to add a Yahoo, I could. I'm just using like VozFree for simplicity. And let me use a live ID. And at this point, the system is taking whatever they received, the profile, reconciling them. From now on, I can use this live ID to activate, to access. And in fact, now I'm going to my application, to the instance, and in fact, I've been authenticated. Here, it recognized my role, and that's it. Now, let's close everything, and let's go on Gmail, just for showing that it's not just a Microsoft thing. John Doe. Here, I got the same email. Of course, the ticket is different. The GUID is different. If I click on that, I get this Google thing. I allow Google to send my data. And from now on, I can authenticate using this Google account. So behind the scenes, this is all using the access control services before. The only difference is I added some custom code for doing this email invitation thing. And if you're interested in the source code of this, you go in the same place that I said, www.fabricandshipping.com, and there is the code. The code is 58,000 lines of code. So good luck finding the right place. Now, it's fairly easy to find also. I'm slowly covering it with documentation, so eventually I'll get to that. But if you have a specific question, feel free to come later and I'll show it. Great. So actually, we may end up being able to show the phone. Now, I will not go through the... Actually, let me grab everything here. Okay. I will not go through the OAuth because it would be just complicated. But let's say that you want to do all this, but you want to do it from the phone. So what happens here? Your application remains there because in this case, we are just using the application not as website, but as web services. Like when you have a phone and you have a rich application, when you go up and you call, you are not usually using a browser, you're just calling web services. And let's say that we want to use, I don't know, let's use Facebook. And here you have your very portable phone. And actually, let's put it on the right hand of a guy. And let's give a representation of the app. Now here we use an interesting trick. The application is a rich client app, so classic Silverlight or whatever else. This holds also on other platforms. And let's say that you want to be able to eventually call this your formal application as a web service. So here the flow is as follows. Sign in. Here you present a list of options for signing in for the user. You get this list of options by making a management call to the access control service. You can ask, what are the identity providers that you trust? And it will give you the list. And you can use it for rendering your own UI, like I did in the sample in the browser, or here in Silverlight. And once the user picks something, unfortunately, our good friends here, like Facebook, they don't allow you to actually make programmatic calls for authenticating. They expect you to pop up a browser. So what we do, we host a browser, and we redirect in here. in the browser there you do your experience for authenticating, you get back the usual token, and somehow we communicate this token from the browser, which is contained, to the application. We send these to the access control service, and you already guessed it. You get back your green token. And once you have a green token, you can save it in isolated storage, you can do all these interesting things, and then you can use, for example, auth for calling these. And Windows Identity Foundation can be extended to use auth in this respect. This scenario is available as a part of an identity training kit, which if you go on your favorite search engine and you just write identity training kit, you'll find it. And what I show you here is, in fact, the end solution of that lab. If you go on the end solution folder and just launch it, you'll see this thing, which I'm hoping will be snappy, because we have just a few minutes left, and you have to do one entire presentation now that I just finished to draw it. So when I hit play here, I will have one place where I'm hosting my REST service, which I will call via OData, which should be coming any minute now. And then I have my rich application here, which implements exactly what I just described. And as soon as it pops up, yes, here it is. Here, let me go and start the application. Here, it's asking the access control service the list. If I would add something here, including Active Directory. If you wanted to use your phone for authenticating with Active Directory with this system, you can. Let me go on Live ID. And here, as you can see, we pop the browser. The experience is not the smoothest, but unfortunately, it's not our choice. Let's say that if identity provider, the only way in which they offer you the authentication is the browser, short of hacking it, which violates the term of use, you have no choice. You have to do that. So we play. Adam Carter, live.com. And now you'll see my precious super secret password. I'm ruined. Sign in. And here, as you can see, I correctly signed in. And now I'm calling my service, securing the service using the token. And it will use the token for understand which lists are my lists as opposed to other users or the public lists. And here, if you look at the code, if you go through the lab, you'll see exactly how this stuff works. So that's great. Finally, I managed to finish my presentation, so now I can present it. So where did we start? Let me restart from here. Okay, we have seen the scenarios here. Fast forward. We started from our on-premises application, in which we saw that we can target the specific technologies that are available in there, and as long as we take into account the implementation details of that, we can do a decent job. However, we live within a boundary, and as soon as we step out of that boundary, we have issues. However, if we formalize the roles of the various elements for this, we can actually still use this capability without big issues. One thing that I failed to make you notice is that this leg of the communication still takes place within the boundaries of your enterprise. So you can literally turn on this capability without even thinking about your firewall. Because the redirection that sends the browser of an authenticated user to the identity provider has to resolve the address within the location of the browser. So if you are sitting in your intranet, or if you receive something which says a localhost, as long as the machine of your browser can hit that, you can do it. So you can literally take anything, put it outside of your enterprise, and it will work with zero issues in terms of infrastructure. Then we have seen a demo of that. We have seen the little trick of how it could be difficult to deal directly with trust issues. But then if you use an intermediary, things are actually much easier. And we have seen how the access control can provide that on the cloud. We have seen a demo of that. Remember, the Chinese thing worked pretty well. We have seen how our friends from San Francisco can take advantage of the web identity providers, and from your application, you still receive the same token. So you have to change exactly zero code for allowing for this. We have seen how this decouples also from the vagaries of details of different protocols. So it's not just a matter of managing relationships and transformation logic. It's also avoiding to write costly protocol code, because now the intermediary takes care of that. And then we have seen how we can twist this thing to also work from your phone. And all I've been doing from 1 hour and 15 minutes, and thank you so much for being so patient and even interactive, like that's absolutely outstanding, is that claims-based identity is an approach that will pay off. We went through the entire set of very diverse scenarios, and yet I always used the same pattern. I just twisted a couple of things here and there, but I used the same products, I reused exactly the same code, and I thought about the problem, what's important, with the same intellectual tools. And so all this stuff seen here may seem scary, but if you take advantage of a Windows Azure platform, it's going to be a good day. Thank you. Thanks. If you wanted to start for Windows Azure for free, go ahead. Here in shoes. No, well, there are all the various details for how to jump on the Windows Azure, and I know that the local guys, they are actually making all these available for you in different formats. Stay up to date with MSDN. How do you pronounce this? Benelux? Belux? 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 Stay up to date with MSDN Belux. And in short, all these, for my big shame, will be online. So if you want to review the most embarrassing moments, you are free to do that in 1 week. And if you have questions, I am here. So take advantage that I cannot run away, because if you send me mails, I usually don't answer. So take advantage of this now. Thanks again.